And today I want to give you a problem. And or at least a challenge, something to explore. And that is to explore the interface between that part of our life which involves our making effort and that part of our life which is effortless. That part of our experience which involves effort and that part of our experience which involves no effort on our part at all. And I think that to explore that interface will reveal a lot about our beliefs, our assumptions, ideas of who we are, what we think we need to do, and what's not necessary to do. And I think if someone picks up this exploration of the interface between effort and effortlessness, can go really far in learning how to live a much more peaceful life, happier life. So I'm curious to hear from a few of you, what happened when you did this effortless meditation? Noticing what was effortless. Did anything arrive effortlessly, or was it all constructed? What happened to you? Anybody want to care to say something? So your neurosis, neurotic thoughts arose effortlessly, and then, but in that you were being aware of them arriving effortlessly, you were less caught by them. Okay, thank you.
Switches and bird noses.
Effortless. And how was it for you to just take that in? Thank you. Marilyn.
I felt a little bit like sort of an animal where you're taking in these sensations and you get really quiet, all of a sudden you realize how you're kind of crouching and you're hearing these things and you're like, what's that? So I guess a lot of fear. Even in a quiet environment, sometimes you're very uneasy.
So for you, it's having things arrive effortlessly meant maybe to be a little bit unprotected.
Yeah.
And so it was fearful then just to be that open and available to what happens. Isn't that very interesting?
I felt a big spaciousness, and I was suspended in it. And my feeling was I wanted to hold on to it, which I couldn't.
Audrey felt a big spaciousness and felt suspended in the spaciousness, but wanted to hold on to it, but then she couldn't.
Yeah. I felt some body sensations. I was noticing my breathing. That was pretty effortless.
Uh-huh.
And I also was feeling some numbness in my sitting. And that was effortless.
Uh-huh. And what was it like for you to tune into the effortless part of your experience? Kind of freedom. How is it different than how you usually are in meditation? Or
I think the focus was different than thinking about, or just being effortless. Because a lot of times in my meditation, I need to bring myself back out of my thoughts, back into the present moment, the present sensation.
How many? Yeah, please.
Well, when you said expand the space between your ears, that really opened up space for me. Yeah, it was very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes.
I was able to make a new distinction between observation that I thought was effortless and observation that's truly effortless. Mm. Like a pain in the shoulder, I find myself directing my attention to it. You know, like checking it out, which is not effortless. It's intention.
Uh-huh.
And in practicing effortlessness, I was like resting in peace.
So by not directing your effort or your attention to the pain was still there, but it was less of a deal. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, I had sort of the opposite experience, which is that usually when I'm meditating, I'm focusing on some particular improvement or insight of my own. But when I cleared my mind completely and was not focused on a specific part of meditation, then I noticed my back was sore.
So she's usually focusing on some particular insight or agenda or thing. And when she cleared her mind, then she was surprised to find out that her back was sore. And if you'd stayed, I guess if you'd stayed involved in what you thought was important to be involved in, you wouldn't have noticed.
That's right.
Yes, please.
I want to see meditation. I know when I start meditation, meditation and I try to stay focused on my breath, normal meditation. And in this meditation, I just felt, I just saw images that would just come, and I thought I would sort of go with that, and then it would change, and sometimes it would bring fear because there was going into a space of being fearful to me, and trying to be very calming. It was almost like it was on this just, I don't know, little voyage in my mind.
Uh-huh.
Kind of different.
Uh-huh. So there was lack of kind of, there was some certain amount of freedom to something inside of you, some part of your inner life, to just kind of flow through you, come through you. And some of it was fearful and some of it was pleasant and just kind of flowed back and forth. What was it like for you to give that kind of freedom to your mind?
I liked it.
Even though you got afraid?
Yeah, I guess because I understood, I felt that I needed to just let that flow through mm-hmm.
So an uninhibited mind, even though it's unpleasant, feels good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I found a different relationship to the sounds. It was sort of like all of the sounds were welcome, whether it was car sounds or breathing sounds, because there wasn't a need to say, oh, well, I'm not supposed to be noticing that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a sound.
So all sounds are allowable. There wasn't a judgment about the right sounds or not the right sounds, or pushing some away, or just they were just arising. Uh-huh. So the joy of being without preferences. Yes.
My boss left. But the part of me that wants to say, am I breathing right? Am I sitting right? But, you know, I just allowed it to go. And like, on here, it was pretty expansive.
So the boss left. The judgments and right and wrong. And it's pretty expansive to do that. Maybe your boss is ready to retire. Give her a golden watch and say, thank you for your service. So why is this a problem that I gave you? To look at this interface between effort and effortlessness. Why is it a challenge?
Um, for me is being able to be effortless. Because what I noticed in mine was that if I was effortless, I was very relaxed, but then the effort would come in, and there was a point where it's like, no, I had to have effort to be effortless.
Yeah.
And no, just relax.
Mm-hmm.
Don't bring in the judgments. And so mine was just an ebb and flow of effortlessness and then awareness that I'm not effortless.
Mm-hmm.
And then just trying to, having effort to let go.
So just the effort to let go. Good. Yes.
When you experience impermanence in our lives, loss, difficulty, separation, individualness, I tend to want to get engaged with it. And painful suffering. And practice effortlessness enables me to be present to it without engaging.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So less suffering, to be present but in an effortless way to some of the tragedies, the difficulties, impermanences of life. Yes?
I'm wondering if it's more effortless for me to maintain my conditioning. And with effort, I can begin to overcome my conditioning.
Uh-huh. So is it less effort to maintain the status quo of your conditioning? And then if you want to be free of your conditioning, maybe you have to do some kind of effort to get over the hump of that and to find something else. Mm-hmm. It's a good question. Good. What are the questions? What are the challenges? What's the juicy stuff? What's the challenge about looking at this interface between effort and effortlessness?
When you talked about that conjunct, I immediately thought of love. And the immediate sense of the effortlessness of maternal love and the effortfulness of other forms of love, or what I'm calling love, in my life, whether they are people or material possessions or any number of different things. And I was struck by that contrast.
Mm. So when I talked about the interface between effort and effortlessness, she was immediately thought about love and how she called maternal love, parental love, certain kind of love can seems to just arise effortlessly, it is there, but other forms of love seem to involve effort, and effort becomes part of it, and that's an interesting distinction. Yeah.
I'm really sleepy this morning, so for me, effortlessness didn't work very well. I think I needed effort, and when I went into effortless, I started to fall asleep.
What's wrong with that?
Well, it's nothing wrong, but I think I get that there are times that effort is needed if I want to get someplace.
Oh, if you want to get someplace.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, of course. So she said today was difficult because she was sleepy. She is sleepy. And so for her to get anywhere, she had to be, even do the exercise, she had to kind of make effort. But the challenge I have for her is that, maybe there's something profoundly wise about falling asleep if you're tired. And why not? So the challenge is, why not just go with what is? Why not go with that flow as opposed to fight it? Or think it should be different. Part of the challenge of effort and effortlessness has to do with challenging our ideas of what we think is supposed to be happening.
One of the juicy things for me was to notice that my eyes opened just before you ended and noticed people look different listening when they're so relaxed. But you could see people listening and they looked way different.
Did you all feel different? She said that she opened her eyes just before the end, and that the way people looked, all of you looked, was very different than how you normally look, I guess. And somehow with listening, there's a quality of something special.
Yeah, you could. Just see people were listening without effort. It was a different way of looking at a room full of people who are listening.
Yeah.
I think that embedded in this question of yours is, why are we looking at this? And for me, it's the more we can attain this effortlessness, the less suffering we'll have, the more open we will be to what's happening.
So Audrey says, the more we can attain a certain kind of effortlessness, the less suffering there'll be. Yes.
For me, the tension lies in, especially in work life, if I'm in charge of something, of how do I mindfully put effort into it without being a force field. So it's too laid back, there's no movement,
mm-hmm.
and especially when there's deadlines involved, and too much forward energy doesn't work in concert with the people that I'm working with, so there's just exquisite tension there.
I don't know for me if I really grasp at all and can feel my difference between effort and effortlessness.
Can you say a little bit more about why you don't see a difference or can't grasp the difference between effort and effortlessness? Maybe there's no need. Just let's see how it goes. Maybe something will bubble up later. Do you feel a need? Do you feel a need? Do you feel a need?
Mm-hmm.
You had an interesting experience?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The a relative of a close relative of this little exercise on effort and effortlessness is a meditation practice called choiceless awareness, where the person makes no choice about where attention is directed. So you don't direct your attention towards the breath or towards the body or towards sounds or any particular direction, but rather the awareness is just open. And to let whatever comes come on its own effortlessly, and for some people that's very challenging, because some people have such strong momentum of always being the agent that directs the show, always being in charge and always trying to make something happen, and sometimes in the spiritual life, some people invest a lot of importance in it, and it is important, so it's reasonable enough. But it's a lot of kind of, you know, almost too much importance, and so you got to do something in order to be spiritual, in order to get someplace. And the idea of giving up the doing is, you know, well, then where is the spiritual life? I have to be, you know, I'm not doing it then, you know. So not doing it, then what's going to happen? And so this choiceless approach is also very challenging. Can be very challenging to some of our beliefs. Some of our self-identity of who we think we are and thinking we have to be in charge, and some of our fears, because sometimes being in charge, being directed in our attention is a way of creating, you know, protecting ourselves from things we don't want to have to look at. Occasionally I meet people who will use mindfulness as a fortress, and they're going to be so mindful that they can't let anything in, really. And that happens sometimes. It's very, very rare that I meet, but I have met a few people like that. And, remember meeting one person who used the noting that way, the mental noting, and he was going to mental note all the time, just day and night, just kept so that he wouldn't have to face himself. just keep present. And so that, you know, so what are, is it okay just to kind of float on what arises effortlessly? Is that okay? And if you take the premise temporarily that it's okay, then it's very interesting to notice the moment where we feel it's not okay. It's no longer safe, it's not appropriate, not in this area. I have to now start applying effort. I have to engage, I have to contract, I have to do something rather than just kind of let something move through me. And I think a lot of this points to trust, the ability to trust or have confidence in one thing, I think, in our innate intelligence. You know, if you sit quiet, if you're relaxed, then the full functioning of our psychophysical being is still going to, you know, a lot of it's still going to operate. No one's telling you to stop thinking, stop being creative, and stop feeling, and stop, you know, having ideas, and they kind of bubble up through. When I was went off to college when I was 18, my father, who's a university professor, took me aside and gave me some advice about how to study at college, how to get involved in college work. So when you get to college, go find a park bench near the library and just sit there until it occurs to you that you're interested in something, knowing something. And then go into the library and read about it. That was the instruction I got for how to go to college. And so here's a person, my father, who had a lot of confidence in the kind of the effortless or innate intelligence, that there's curiosity there, it arises, and that curiosity, you know, will, you know, you want to follow through in it. It takes some effort to get to the library and look at the books and all that, but it's a different quality of effort than the effort of, you know, rushing off to the, you know, kind of, you know, to this, looking at the schedule of classes and pondering the rest of my life and what's really important in my career and how I'm going to set myself up properly and how right professors to get so I get good grades, and, you know, and just figuring and, you know, and strategizing and bearing down. And that's a very different approach to, you know, how to do it. So can we trust? What happens if we trust our innate intelligence? The intelligence, the thinking, the figuring, the movements of the mind, which happens on its own, kind of effortlessly, as if what arises effortlessly is maybe enough. And maybe you'll find yourself in situations where you don't know what to say because the effortless mind, it doesn't occur to the effortless mind to say anything. It doesn't have a good reply or a good rejoinder, you know. So... You know, maybe you tell your companion, nothing occurs to me. You know, and because in the innate mind, you know, you're not just reaching or stretching the mind. Oh, what do I say? You have to figure out something to say. I once had a very profound spiritual kind of experience in the presence of another person, a spiritual teacher. And it was pretty far out, the experience. Until I got self-conscious that I wasn't saying anything. I wasn't keeping up my end of the conversation. And then I contracted and came back. And I thought, oh well. That's the way it goes. Yes?
So when I sit down to meditate and my mind is worrying about something, then... I make an effort to deal with the worry so that I can get to a place of effortless intent. Does that make sense?
So she said when she sits down to meditate and she's worrying, she makes effort to deal with her worry so she can get to the place of effortlessness. So behind that strategy, which is a reasonable one, I'm not saying it's wrong, it's great. It's a completely reasonable approach. But behind that strategy, there's probably some judgment about what should and shouldn't be happening.
You're not saying that I should just let my mind worry when it wants to?
It might be interesting to try. If you get bored after a while, you probably stop worrying. But you know, as a gentleman up there said, there's a quote. Maybe you're going to say it again.
Well, I have something similar. I heard Richard Shanklin was kind of talking about the concentration part of meditation versus mindfulness, but this practice that I'm trying to do, because worry or scattered thoughts, I try to focus on the breath. So that's an effort. You know, that I've read and heard all this instruction. You get the little puppy to come back. You try to be gentle. I try to force out all that stuff and just keep coming back to the breath. So that, and then concentration becomes effortless. But, you know, it's certainly not effortless for me. So I have to keep nudging it back to get some level of concentration. Which is, it feels like a different project than the unjudgmental
right.
awareness.
So yeah, you should note that I did that exercise, that guided meditation, at the end of the sitting rather than the beginning. Partly because if we did it cold, just at the beginning of the sitting, you probably weren't going to be as settled as you were near the end. And it helps to have a settled mind to do this, because if the mind just scatters and runs off all the time, you're never here. You know, you have to be here to some degree. But if there is a lot of agitation in the mind, a lot of activity in the mind, a lot of worry or whatever, if it's possible, there is this place of being the observer or the watcher, or watching, being mindful, that is out of the flow of the worry, but it's okay with it. Just lets it kind of arise and pass. It's not in it. So that's what you were saying at the beginning of the question and answer, the discussion period, where you notice your neurotic thoughts, and they're just there as usual. However, the difference was that now you're somehow not in them, and you were somehow apart. It was more, I guess, more freeing or more peaceful, or you know. So is there a new way to relate to your worry that you don't have to, you know, it doesn't involve changing and getting rid of it, but stepping out of its current, and then not making it a problem. What do you think of that? You've been nice. Yes. But,
I was thinking about one of the situations when it comes to effortlessness, and one of the ways one gets there sometimes is just their exhaustion. Sometimes when the way to let go is if you're trying so hard to solve something or fix something, you just exhaust yourself. But at some point, you can just let go.
Yeah, I've done that. Sometimes in spiritual life, it just you're butting your head against the wall, spiritual wall, just you know, and so you know, just exhausting yourself. And finally, I just had to, you know, this, I can't do it anymore. And that's when the door opened. So one of the interesting questions here also is around effort, is what is the belief that supports or is behind the effort you are making? If can you question, whenever you see yourself making effort, it's worth maybe questioning, looking, what do I believe? What's the belief behind it? And I'm not saying it's wrong to make effort. Effort is beautiful. I love making effort. But this particular challenge of today is to look at this world of effortlessness to see what you can learn from it and be challenged by it. And one way to do that is to start questioning the beliefs that are supporting the effort you make. Yeah.
So if trust is the sort of what feeds the non-effort, a sense of trust,
then suppose, you know, you're, I mean, trust is, I mean, sometimes it's just, it's like impossible. You can't, you know, there's situations where you can't trust the universe. I mean, because you've seen stuff that you're like, you know, how could that ever happen?
Yeah.
How are we supposed to like go through life making no effort, you know, or
Are we supposed to go through life making no effort? I think that there is also effortless effort. And so that innate intelligence that's within us sometimes prompts us to do things. So you're walking down the sidewalk and someone next to you trips. You know, it's kind of, I'll lift that person up. I'll help the person up. That's you making effort. But that effort at doing something arises out of this effortless, you know, it could be very this effortless place. It could arise out of a kind of neurotic place. Oh, that person fell. If I don't pick this up, this person, help this person up, they're going to think I'm a bad person, and they're going to tell everyone else how bad I am. I better make a good show of how I'm helping this person up. And yes.
Genocide or AIDS or something
yes.
Like that. You know, how are they supposed to trust the universe? How are they supposed to give up having effort, you know, when it's like, they move on, they're off in their life.
Yeah, I'm not saying at all today that you're supposed to necessarily live your life always out of effortlessness. I think but I think there's something very powerful exploration. That's why today I was offering a problem, not an answer. I think there's a problem to explore here. Really, use this little question of effortlessness as a little kind of bomb that you drop into your mind. See, you know, to really kind of clear up, question things in a new way. What's going on? And you're doing that. And so I love your question. I don't really feel like wanting to give an answer, except that I think that there are people who find themselves in great tragedy, and some people respond, some people don't. But there are examples of people who respond, and I don't know where it came from, my response. I don't know how I did it, I don't know where it came from, but it just seemed this is what had to happen, and I just did all this stuff. I dashed into burning buildings and pulled the people out, and I never would have done that in my right mind, but somehow that situation just called something forth. So there are times, I think, when there's a tremendous marshalling of energy, what we call effort, energy, activity, to respond to the tragedies and difficulties of the world. I think we do a disservice to ourselves not to respond. But the question is, with what kind of heart, what kind of mind do we respond with? And do we respond with a mind that feels mistrustful of who we are in relationship to it, or do we respond with a heart or mind that's trustful of how we can be in relationship to it? And if we're trustful, maybe it's okay, our response, how we're going to respond is appropriate. So I'll tell you a story from Friday when I met with some Buddhist chaplains. Someone told me, we were told a story I hope this is a fits along. Sometimes you never know what the right response is, and sometimes you face tragedies and you don't know what the right thing is. So many different ways of responding. One example from one story from Friday was this man was going, a chaplain was going around to different rooms, hospital rooms, and he was told there was a woman with Alzheimer's who there was no communication possible with her. And he wasn't told to go see her, he was told to see other people, but he went by her door and said, I'll go and see her. So he went in, and it occurred to him to play music for her. And initially he tried to have a conversation with her, and it was incomprehensible what happened. But then he played music for her for about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that. And then after that, she relaxed, and she started asking him about his musical instruments. And and they had a coherent conversation for a little while, so somehow it just occurred to him that that was the response, play music, and then another example was of a chaplain being asked to go down to the emergency ward because hospital chaplains are often asked to go to the emergency ward for some kind of tragedy, deal with something. But this time it was a school bus accident, and there were 15 kids who all came into the emergency ward at the same time. And 15 kids is too many to go around to see them all. So what's the right response to that then? And so somehow it occurred to the chaplain to go sit in the nursing station and meditate quietly in the chair, in the middle of the kind of center of emergency section. And maybe it's kind of passive. Oh, what's this? It's pretty passive. You should be out there doing something. Doing is where it's all at, right? And he sat there for 2 hours in meditation. And later, the nurses and doctors came up and explained that was really great because we were rushing back and forth between different rooms. And every time we passed you, it was a calming influence. It really felt helpful for us to know someone was praying for us. So I gave you those two examples in an attempt to try to explain that sometimes we don't know what the appropriate response is in different situations. And sometimes the effortless place, if we allow ourselves to kind of go there, sometimes is the most creative one, and sometimes the wisest one. And sometimes once that effortless occurrence, this idea has arisen, maybe then there's a kind of effortlessness in applying a lot of energy. It's not being passive. Is this making some sense? No? Maybe? Unsatisfying. Well. So, I sit here and so my effortless mind, is concerned about wanting to say something that's helpful. Yes? And one of the areas to explore around that is to explore the idea of who's making the effort. And often the idea of effort, when we're making effort, is connected to sense of will, sense of purpose, sense of self. I'm the one who's making the effort. And the effortless place is sometimes much more easily identified with as not coming from the self, the usual self-image or self-representation. And so are we willing, or can we, or is it appropriate sometimes to allow something which is not our normal self-identity to be the motivator for what moves through us and what we want to do. Yeah.
The thing that's coming up for me right now is authenticity. It's like your father wanted you to be the most authentic person you could be, sitting on that bench, finding out what you wanted to do, all the choices that you wanted to do. And sitting, you want to be the most wholesome, energetic reality experience. And so we have that ability in itself to experience it.
So the question is, as I said, it's a question of authenticity. And when we sit how can we allow the most wholesome, most complete presentation of who we are in our authenticity? And what some people will say, some spiritual teachers will say, is you can't help but being complete. And if you just relax and let the effortless world just show itself, that's enough. It doesn't have to look complete in order for it to be complete. It is what it is. And then what I've seen over and over again is that when we allow the effortless world to move through us without trying to control or limit or direct what the show is, that it's not a fixed thing, but it's a process. And that process has its own laws and patterns and directions that it wants to take. And I, as long as, you know, it's kind of a faith statement, but if we're watching, if we're present as opposed to involved, if we're kind of not in the current, but kind of standing on the shore watching, in a sense, that changes the nature of the process, and changes in such a way that the process is health producing, moves towards freedom. So, no way. I saw your hand first, and then maybe we should stop.
For me, the effortlessness was very easy, and there was a certain amount of, I don't know, guilt or whatever, the feeling like what's hard is the concentration effort. It's coming back to my concentration on my breathing. And I was thinking, for me, I should, you know, I really need to work on my concentration and to be able to do that. And effortlessness, even though it's really wonderful, it really opened up to it.
I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of wisdom to developing concentration, and there's a lot of wisdom to having a directed meditation practice. There's a lot of wisdom to having a directed life at times and making that effort. I'm not holding us up as the right way to be or the right spiritual practice to do, but I thought it was interesting to offer this as a problem to help clarify aspects of your life. And then maybe helps you make your, know there are a variety of ways of practicing and a variety of modes of being, and that in different times different things are appropriate, and so sometimes it's really the appropriate thing is to develop concentration. Hopefully, it's the effortless mind, the innate intelligence that says, oh, you know, I think I need to develop more concentration now. And so, okay, I'll do it. As opposed to some should, you know, the great Buddhist authority says, you know, in order to be a good person, you need to develop concentration. But you kind of see, oh, this is what's helpful, this is what's necessary, this is what's useful right now. And I teach a class on concentration practice, right? So I think it's very helpful for people. So sometimes in the circles I teach in, this kind of teaching on choiceless awareness or effortless kind of awareness is taught at the end of a 10-day retreat. You know, it's not, you know, it's once there's a lot of stability, the person has developed a certain level of concentration, presence, skills, self-awareness. So it's kind of a little bit understood to be a little bit of an advanced practice. So, you know, please don't go home and think that this is, you know, you're supposed to be good at this automatically or this is it. But really, I'm not even offering this as a practice for you to do. What I'm offering today is as a problem, as a problem in the sense that for help your mindfulness, your exploration of yourself and what goes on and what motivates you and how you do things and what you do and the kind of effort you make and questioning the effort you make, questioning other ways of being and that was the intention of the talk, and so. May you have a big problem. But yeah, don't worry about it. Thank you.